married, so your parents have to show up with some thing to give to the other parents to take, because kids in that day were a commodity in the sense that if you had a bunch of sons and stuff, they worked the farm. It was an agricultural society. So if I was coming and marrying your son or marrying your daughter or whatever, I was taking away a way for you to make commerce or to make, you know, your income or to make food for your family. So I would bring something to offer you, you know, I guess depending on how pretty your daughter was, how many goats you got, you know, that kind of, so that's why there's always an offering, there's always an arrangement in the marriage about, you know, here's what, so Samson pretty much makes his parents arrange this marriage, which is, you know, on one hand we kind of talk about like tough love, how you could be, as a parent, there's just some times where you get to the point where you say, I'm just not going to do that. If you're going to do this, you're on your own. And that's, I think as a society, we have slipped past that to where now, you know, most of the time the kids are running the house from what it looks like, from what I see in the news, and nobody knows how to tell anybody no. Well, in this case, you see that, you would think their parents should, but the next verse says, and God did this to provoke the Philistines. So, God's in this, even though we don't see that directly. You would think not. So, long story short, they're going down. Somehow, Samson wanders off. And that is another part of this. Samson is always by himself. He never is surrounded by godly men. He's never surrounded by somebody that he can sound off to or that can sound off to him and say, hey, he's constantly by himself, and we saw, it's kind of interesting, he's attacked physically by a lion. And we see in Job that Satan roams around like a roaring lion looking for who he can devour. And the way a lion kills in the wild is it separates a weak animal from the herd. So you're on your own, you don't have the protection of the herd, and then it kills you. But in this case, the lion attacks, he kills the lion, which that you couldn't say he violated his vow. The other part of the Nazarene vow was you were never supposed to touch anything dead. And if you did, you had to go through a ceremony to become clean again, and then it started over your Nazarene. So he kills the lion, but what he does horrible is that he goes back later and walk it, and he's going to stop and see how the lion's doing. And some bees have made a nest, so he gets honey. Then he gets, so he's touched something dead, he's violated his vows. Then he gets some honey and he gives it to his parents. Now his parents are unclean and they don't even know it. They have touched, by extension, a dead thing. So it just shows, I guess, how callous he was. Well, long story short, he has no friends, so the Philistines have to get him 30 guys so he could have a bachelor party, because he has no friends. Which just shows you the world is really, really waiting with open arms to welcome you into what they're doing. And so, I would assume, it doesn't really say anything, but I would assume it was a 7-day drunk fest that he was involved in that. And so again, violating his Nazarene vows, just taking them for granted. What happens, he makes up a riddle in this. They say, well, they wager 30 garments. So if they don't give him an answer, they got to give him 30 garments. And if they answer it, he's got to give them 30 garments. I don't know. Again, the Lord's in here because he says this is part of his plan. Long story short, his future wife, like, I don't know when you would consider her his wife, but his future wife will say, badgers him throughout the week, and finally the last day of the party, he tells her the riddle, the answer. Well, she tells the guys at the party the answer to the riddle. So now it's kind of interesting, that was where we were laughing last week, how heifer was a term of endearment, because he said, if you hadn't plowed the field with my heifer, you wouldn't know the answer to my riddle. So he basically said, I know where you got this. You got it from, you know, my future wife. So,
I wouldn't try that guy.
I'm not going down that path. That's for sure. You beautiful heifer. And what he does was kind of interesting. He goes up the road to the next village, kills 30 guys, takes their clothes, and gives in his payment to the... So I guess he was like, well, I never sold you, they'd be new, or, you know, not used, or not have blood stains on them, but here they are. And so he storms away mad, and here we have an interesting... So we'll get into this. The very last verse, it says, and Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. So not like your best man stepping in for you. But... So obviously, I think this was God's plan to keep him. If you know the sin of Balaam with King Balak, if he talked out of Revelation, that his sin was, hey, bring the girls, as the Israelites were going across the desert, bring the girls from the kingdom, the pretty ones, down to the edge of the camp, and the Israelites will get involved with them, and once they fall into the sexual immorality, God can't bless them. So I kind of get the feeling that this was God's way of keeping Samson so he never consummated his marriage, so he didn't fall into this particular sin, which seems to be, we have to fly this guy. That's where we are. So that's where we're starting. So he marched off. He killed 30 people, gave them. He left. He doesn't know it, but his wife is given to his companion, to his best man. So it says, after some days, at the time of the wheat harvest, so this is obviously in the fall, when the fields are very, very dry, you know, ready to be harvested, Samson went to visit his wife with a young goat. So he's a pretty heifer, and she's worthy of a goat. So life is good. And he said, I will go into my wife in the chamber, but her father would not allow him to go in. So... You know, he doesn't know it, but his wife has been given to another man, and her father's obviously keeping him from adding adultery to his list of problems that he's going to face. So he says, and her father said, I really thought that you utterly hated her, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please take her instead. I guess she was a whole... instead of a heifer.
Fox.
So it's just kind of interesting.
Fox, you find out.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, many times we see this with all throughout the Bible with Isaac and Jacob. You know, this wife thing, they get tricked out of wives and get it. It's kind of a strange. And Samson said to them, this time I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. So Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches, and he turned them tail to tail and put a torch between each pair of tails. I don't know, that seems like kind of a miracle to me. I mean, 300 foxes, that had to take some time, or God just, you know, was like, those are kind of thing, like, all right, get in line, we got some mission for you. I'm not sure, but he took the time to catch 300 foxes. So then he tied a torch between their tails, put them in pairs, and then he set fire to the torches and let the foxes go in the standing grain of the Philistines, and set fire to the stacked grain and the standing grain as well as the olives. So here at the harvest time, he has just destroyed their livelihood and their, you know, maybe put their lives at risk, in that there's nothing to eat here. Again, you know, all part of God's plan. Then the Philistine said, who has done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. So we talked about before, one of the traits of the Philistines was they burned their enemies alive. So they had a propensity for this. And it's kind of interesting that this is the threat they used to tell, get her to reveal Samson's riddle. They threatened to burn her and her father. So she told them, and it ends up happening to her anyway, her and her father. So Samson said to them, if this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged on you, and after that I will quit. Then he struck them from hip and thigh with a great blow. I tried to look at this hip and thigh. I mean, it just, from what I can gather, it just means he just beat them to a pulp. It doesn't really, it's kind of a, just a phrase. I couldn't find anything.
I have something.
Go ahead.
It says, this is a proverbial for ruthless slaughter. That's an expression that means ruthless slaughter.
There you go. So he beat them to a pulp and killed them. That was interesting, and he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock at Etham. It's funny because the name Etham means refuge in the rock. And it's kind of interesting for us that we can seek refuge in the rock ourselves. And our rock is obviously Jesus Christ, but I think this is metaphorically what's happening. And the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? And they said, we have come up to find Samson to do to him as he did to us. Then the 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock at Etham and said to Samson, do you not know the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them. So here, this blows the complete, they seem to be totally happy in their predicament. In every other book, this is where somebody would blow the shofar, the troops would rally, and we would, you know, Samson or whatever other judge would lead them to some kind of victory over their enemies and would throw off, you know, the yoke of oppression. Well, they're kind of perfectly happy to be here. You get the feeling, I don't know, perfectly happy. But then, they actually end up, they kind of side with the Philistines. So, Samson might be a judge, but he's not a leader. He has no, it doesn't seem like he has any social skills. Like, if there's no, he just does whatever he sees, whatever he wants, whatever he grabs, and that seems not to be a requisite for a leader. That people just see somebody as, he's just basically an immature child with a lot of strength that, you know, kind of comes and goes. So,
it's a misrepresentation of what was done to him, too.
Right. Yeah, he's like,
yeah, I know what he did to them, what they did to me.
Yeah, they just gave away his wife. They didn't do, those guys really didn't do anything. Well, he burned his, well, it wasn't his wife. And they said to him, we have come down to find you, that we might give you to the hands of the Philistines. So there's a total 180 degrees from what we've seen throughout this book, you know. Blowing the horn, rallied, or some kind of plan. One guy triggers it, the country, you know, this portion, whatever, the tribes, a couple tribes rally and throw off the yoke. And here, the yoke. And here he's like, they're like, nah, we come here to help them. So Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not attack me yourself. So I think here he's making a way to make sure that he doesn't attack Israel in anything. Did you have something? Oh, I thought you were here. And they said to him, no, we will only bind you to give you into the hand. We will surely not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. Then he came to Lehi. The Philistines came shouting to meet him. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that was on his arm became as flax that had caught fire. So they just basically fell apart, and his bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, and put out of his hands and took it, and with it he struck down 1,000 men. And Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have struck down 1,000 men. Anybody see a problem with this?
Well, he's dead again.
What's that?
The donkey was dead again.
Well, not just that. What does this battle say he can't do? Well, it says he can't touch anything dead.
But that's what I said. Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't understand you. Muffled around like that.
Donkey
didn't. I'm sorry if I missed that. So,
look at them ears cleaned out.
Yeah, I probably could. So here we have an interesting contrast in that he killed 1,000 men, but in doing so, and obviously the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. This doesn't seem something that's like normal. He doesn't seem to ever have any formal, you know, training as a military guy or anything.
Original Rambo.
But, yeah, he's Sambo.
Sambo.
So it says, as soon as he had finished speaking, he threw, and he has a propensity for making these, like, riddles and little songs. I guess he has to entertain himself because he's never around anybody to entertain him or to entertain them. So he seems to just make up riddles. But, so as soon as he had finished speaking, he threw a jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramah Leah, which means elevation of the jawbone. I don't know what that does to put in that. Well, this is kind of another interesting, and we'll kind of finish there. So it said, he was very thirsty, and for the first time, you will see that he called upon the Lord and said, you have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant, and shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? So, it's kind of the old, you know, we see it with all this, like, you know, even Israel going, delivered us from the Egyptians, you brought us out here to the desert to die. You know, it's like always after these great things, they kind of, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting, but I think it's very interesting that as far as my knowledge is, this is the first time it ever says in there, and called upon the Lord. Usually the Spirit just comes upon us. Doesn't ever say he asked for it. So this is the first time he says he called upon the Lord. And what's he doing? He's crying. He's being a crybaby. Right? I'm thirsty. Water, please. So,
where can you look back in the sand and see the sinful footprints and the double footprints? Yeah, it's on how you perceive what Samson was going through at the time. I mean, he obviously knew that when he was saying with the jawbone of a donkey, killing 1,000 people, how many times did that happen in history? You know, so he could have been, and the next event is where I get my idea of it, the next verse 20 is what happens after that, because it shows that now he's realized that Samson wasn't doing it all on his own. And that's what I look at.
And it says, and God split, verse 19, and God split open the hollow place that is at Leah, and the water came out from it, and when he drank, his spirit returned and he revived. Therefore, the name was called Ekahor-Zedleh to this day, which means spring of the one calling. So, you know, he asked the Lord for help. The Lord gave him, you know, the water. And I don't know. Samson's just a really, really interesting character. That he's just such a interesting case in that this is the first time we've seen him cry out, but we've seen the Spirit act in his life many times. He kind of takes for granted all the vows he took, which was, it's interesting, I was contrasting it to took the vow and lost his daughter. How seriously he took his vow. The dilemma? Is that it?
Jephthah.
That's what it is. And how seriously he took his vow and he lost his daughter. Now, whether he killed her or whether she was given to, like, the priest, the minister, and the, you know, there's debate about that. But he lost it because he took his vows. So here's this guy kind of going ramshackle through life, and just the spirit comes on him, but he ignores all the vows he took. He doesn't take anything really serious. So it's kind of interesting that he judged Israel with David Philistine 20 years. So his judging only lasted half the time that most of the others did. That we see expounded upon in the book, which is at least for 40 years. And so what's interesting now, you would think this closes this, but now we're going to go back and get a whole bunch more details.
You know, one other thing. You know how you were doing like chronological of the Bible? And I just look at Samson as Christians today. They're brought up in God, understanding God. They're explained it, they're taught it, they go to Sunday school, and then they seem to fall away, and then they seem to come back. But God doesn't know what to be. And so I see Samson as a forerunner of maybe extreme now, a little extreme, but he's a forerunner of what a lot of the kids perceive it to be today.
I'm that guy. My parents, I was raised in a Southern Baptist church, and I swear to you, if the wind blew the door open in that church, I fell in, because my parents were there. And as terrible as it is, one time my mother asked me about my prayer life, and I said, I have one prayer. She said, oh yeah, what's that? I said, that this place burns down. But, you know, it just poured so much on me, and I didn't understand.
My dad had explained. God has to move at 18 inches from here to here. That's the explanation he always said. He said, you can't, there's nothing you can do for that 18 inches.
So from 16 to 30, I was the antithesis of church. And then as I finally aged out, my poor mother, you know, and it was kind of weird. I would be at parties and doing all kinds of stuff that I should not be. And in the back of my heart, I think, don't come back tonight, Lord, because you're going to catch me in a bad spot, you know? And it's weird that stuck with me, even though, you know, I was so opposed to it. And then at some point in my life, as I started to struggle more and more, kick at the goes, all those things came pouring back in. And I was just like, I'm going nowhere. I have no control over this. I'm just, there's got to be something better. And that's when the floodgates kind of opened for me. So, any parents out there that your parents, you know, your kids are struggling, I guess I'm a hope for you. But,
just the cool thing with this part here, though, is you see God starting to work out perfecting Samson's sin. Because, you know, the Spirit came upon him before he killed the lion. But you don't see him give credit for God doing the work. Here, he saw the salvation was from the Lord. But there's God. What does that fight? So you see God developing his faith.
And
even though it's not perfected yet, he's perfecting it.
And I even see the victory over the lion as a trap by Satan, in that he had this great victory over Satan metaphorically, but Satan still enticed him with the sweetness of the sin. And he came back. You know, and he did exactly what he wasn't supposed to do. He still, Satan might not have destroyed him physically in that moment, but he destroyed him a little bit spiritually every time. And I think that this book is kind of like, I forget the song, but like, nobody falls in a day. You know, there's a series of decisions you make in your life that start you down a path, you know. And at some point it bears fruit, good or bad. But it isn't just the most, you know, I mean, I guess it can happen, you can make. But if you're really, really in the world's word and faithful and doing what you're not going to fall. It's when you start making those little decisions, what you see, what you hear, what you think, and it starts to become a path that you walk down that it becomes fruit. Nobody falls in the sand. And I think that stands his life. Is that he, eventually he falls, but it's a it's a path, a steady downward spot.
When you talk about his son, he said he broke his vow. Well, if you, when I read that, his parents actually were the ones who made the vow that God came and said this is what's going to be. And they agreed with him. But Samson himself never came to that place where he accepted what they had agreed to and kept living in that way. He was like, he goes, it's a private child. But he didn't make the vow, so he couldn't break a vow he had never actually made.
But he was supposed to be a Nazarene.
He was supposed to be.
That's something you have to take on yourself.
Yes, it's not gifted to the parents. I mean, you know,
Christianity is a choice.
He already picked them, so he knew. I mean, he's going to turn it around for him.